The powers of darkness are always trying to ruin the good plans of the Lord, and they do this by trying to influence the thinking of the people involved. But God has a lovely way of bringing about his purposes in spite of all the plots and the schemes of man, or indeed, the devil.
Welcome to Mission 66 from the ministry of Pastor Luis Seau and Transworld Radio. Today, we're diving into 2 Samuel, King David's triumphs, struggles, and lessons in faith, leadership, and God's guidance. Grab your study guide at mission66.org and follow along with John Matthews and Esther Sisulu as we discover how these timeless stories speak into our lives today. Let's get started.
Today, we are in the Old Testament book of 2 Samuel, which details the account of the rise of David as king, first over the tribe of Judah and then over all of Israel. Our teacher, John Matthews, will bring us the account from chapters 2 through to 4 with the theme, King of Judah.
Esther, thank you so much, and a very warm welcome to Mission 66, wherever you join us from today. It is so good to be with you and have your company. And we're now in this time period known as the monarchy in Israel. Saul, the first king, he lost the throne and his life ultimately because he'd failed to carry out God's instructions from the prophet Samuel. And so the second book of Samuel is actually a continuation of 1 Samuel. It's just that the focus now shifts to David, who was to become the greatest king of Israel. And in chapter 2, we find him being proclaimed king of his tribe, first of all, Judah. So let's read from verse 1. After this, David inquired of the Lord, "Shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah?" And the Lord said to him, "Go up." David said, "To which shall I go up?" And he said, "To Hebron." So David went up there, and his two wives also, Ahinoam of Jezreel, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. And David brought up his men who were with him, everyone with his household, and they lived in the towns of Hebron. And the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. You know, David so careful again, as he always had been, to consult God before he makes a move. He then receives the instruction to go up to Hebron, where he would be anointed king of Judah. And David commends the men of Jabesh Gilead because they'd honoured Saul and buried him. But then he invites them to come over and be loyal to him now. Here's verse 8. But Abner, the son of Ner, commander of Saul's army, took Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim. And he made him king over Gilead and the Asherites and Jezreel and Ephraim and Benjamin and all Israel. Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel, and he reigned 2 years. But the house of Judah followed David. And the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. And so what we see developing here at this point is a civil war. You've got the tribe of Judah on David's side, and some of the northern tribes, Ephraim being the biggest, who'd rallied around the descendants of Saul. And the northern tribes called themselves Israel. Now, Abner and the servants of Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, on one side, they met up with Joab and the servants of David at the pool of Gibeon. And instead of everybody having a fight, they pick 12 men from each side, and they hold this gladiatorial contest there at the pool to see which side would win. But all 24 of them end up being killed or killing each other, and so nothing is resolved. And the rest of the men get into a great scrap, and the battle was incredibly fierce. And it ends with David's men beating Abner and the men of Israel. And then verse 26 tells us that Abner called to Joab, Shall the sword devour forever? Do you not know that the end will be bitter? How long will it be before you tell your people to turn from the pursuit of their brothers? And Joab said, As God lives, if you had not spoken, surely the men would not have given up the pursuit of their brothers until the morning. So Joab blew the trumpet, and all the men stopped and pursued Israel no more, nor did they fight any more. But not before they'd killed 360 of Abner's men from the tribe of Benjamin. And then in 2 Samuel or 2 Samuel 3, Abner himself switches sides to join David. This is verse 1. There was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. And David grew stronger and stronger while the house of Saul became weaker and weaker. I'm going to paraphrase now because the third chapter lists David's sons in verses 2 to 5, highlighting his growing strength. And in that era, having many sons was a sign of power and standing in society. And among those sons were three of particular importance, and we're going to read more about those later in Mission 66. They were Amnon, Absalom, and Adonijah. Meanwhile, Abner had gained influence within Saul's house, becoming increasingly powerful. So let's pick up chapter 3 at verse 6. While there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, Abner was making himself strong in the house of Saul. Now Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Ai. And Ish-bosheth said to Abner, Why have you gone in to my father's concubine? Abner was very angry over the words of Ish-bosheth and said, Am I a dog's head of Judah? To this day I keep showing steadfast love to the house of Saul, your father, to his brothers and to his friends, and have not given you into the hand of David, and yet you charge me today with a fault concerning a woman. God do so to Abner, and more also, if I do not accomplish for David what the Lord has sworn to him, to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah from Dan to Beersheba. And Ish-bosheth could not answer Abner another word, because he feared him. And Abner sent messengers to David on his behalf, saying, To whom does the land belong? Make your covenant with me, and behold, my hand shall be with you to bring over all of Israel to you. And David replied, Good, I will make a covenant with you, but one thing I require of you, that is, you shall not see my face unless you first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see my face. Then David sent messengers to Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, saying, Give me my wife Michal, for whom I paid the bridal price of 100 foreskins of the Philistines. And Ish-bosheth sent and took her from her husband Paltiel, the son of Laish. But her husband went with her, weeping after her, all the way to Bahurim. And then Abner said to him, Go, return. And he returned. So Abner here, what's he doing? Well, he's seeking this reconciliation with David, hoping to expand his own influence, doubtless, but he has to prove his loyalty to David by bringing back David's wife, Michal, whom Saul had given to another man. Remember that? And his name was called Paltiel. Well, this was done, and there was quite a scene because you had Paltiel following his wife, crying as they're taking her away from him. But David recognizes that Abner is on his team now. However, the move infuriates General Joab, who now perceives Abner as a threat. And acting on his own anger, Joab deceitfully lures Abner back to Hebron and kills him. Chapter 3, verse 26 recounts what happened. When Joab came out from David's presence, he sent messengers after Abner, and they brought him back from the cistern of Sirah. But David did not know about this. And when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside into the midst of the gate to speak with him privately, and there he struck him in the stomach so that he died, for the blood of Asahel, his brother. Afterward, when David heard of this, he said, I and my kingdom are forever guiltless before the Lord for the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. May it fall upon the head of Joab and upon all his father's house, and may the house of Joab never be without one who has a discharge, or who is leprous, or who holds a spindle, or who falls by the sword, or who lacks bread. So Joab and Abishai his brother killed Abner, because he had put their brother Asahel to death in the battle at Gibeon.
Just to interrupt you there for a moment, John, this phrase, holds a spindle, can you go into what that means?
Yeah, well, look, it's part of the curse that David had pronounced on Joab for killing Abner, and it means needing crutches. So to summarize the events in chapter 3, Abner, there you have him, he'd killed Joab's brother Asahel when Abner was fighting for Saul's house. But then Abner was insulted by Ish-bosheth, and he changed sides. Joab is suspicious, believing Abner was still loyal to Saul's house, even though Abner had restored David's wife Michal to him, as proof that he had indeed wholeheartedly come over to David. But Joab kills Abner, even though he'd not heard the whole story, and in doing so, becomes guilty of murder, and that was to become a blot on the name of Joab for the rest of his life. And chapter 4 then depicts the assassination of Ish-bosheth, who was the son of Saul and was considered king of the tribes forming Israel. Upon hearing of Abner's death, Ish-bosheth becomes alarmed that he was going to be next. And as we skip to verse 4 in this chapter, we find out that there's a grandson of Saul and his name is Mephibosheth. Verse 4. Jonathan, the son of Saul, had a son who was crippled in his feet. He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. As she fled in her haste, he fell and became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. Now, we're going to hear more about Mephibosheth in future episodes, but let's return then to the assassination plot of Ish-bosheth now in verse 5, and it reads like this. Now the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite, Rechab and Baana set out, and about the heat of the day they came to the house of Ish-bosheth as he was taking his noonday rest. And they came into the midst of the house as if to get wheat, and they stabbed him in the stomach. Then Rechab and Baana his brother escaped. When they came into the house, as he lay on his bed in his bedroom, they struck him and put him to death and beheaded him. They took his head and went by the way of the Araba all night, and brought the head of Ish-bosheth to David at Hebron. And they said to the king, "Here is the head of Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy, who sought your life. The Lord has avenged my lord the king this day on Saul and on his offspring." But David answered Rechab and Baana his brother, the sons of Rimmon the Beerothite, saying, "As the Lord lives, who has redeemed my life out of every adversity, when one told me, 'Behold, Saul is dead,' and thought he was bringing good news, I seized him and killed him at Ziklag, which was the reward I gave him for this news. How much more when wicked men have killed a righteous man in his own house on his bed, shall I now not require his blood at your hand and destroy you from the earth?" And David commanded his young men, and they killed them and cut off their hands and feet and hung them beside the pool at Hebron. But they took the head of Ish-bosheth and buried it in the tomb of Abner at Hebron. And you know, these three chapters, they're highlighting the tribal squabbles ongoing in a divided Israel. And despite knowing God's revelation, the people are consumed by factionalism. David versus Saul's family, it leads to battles, to betrayals. And David is attempting, you know, as best he can to lead with wisdom and peace. But this civil war is proving unavoidable. And you know, Israel may have done a lot of good had they gotten their heads together and formed a united alliance, but they were too busy trying to grab power from one another. So the question that comes to mind, Esther, is will any good come of all of this?
Well, John, I certainly hope that the answer to that question is yes, things will end up being resolved. But I suppose we just encourage you to stay listening to Mission 66 as we'll uncover this in future episodes. Well, I'm Esther with you here on Mission 66, and this program is heard in several languages around the world. And you know, friend, we depend on your prayers and financial support to continue this ministry globally. Now, if you would like to give to this ministry, please visit mission66.org. That's mission66.org. Well, as we continue having a look through chapters 2, 3, and 4 of 2 Samuel, John, perhaps you can answer this question, the first question I have for you. Now, David begins to take up his reign at this point. We see that, but he hasn't yet become king of all of Israel. Why hasn't that happened yet?
Well, you're right. He hasn't just yet. You know, in the two books of Samuel, David is anointed on three occasions. The first is when he's still a youth, when God instructs the prophet Samuel to go to the house of Jesse and pour the anointing oil on the head of one of Jesse's sons. Now, when we reach chapter 2 of 2 Samuel, David is anointed, but he's anointed as king of the tribe of Judah only. That anointing was a public act, recognizing his authority, and it came to the cheers of the Judeans. A king couldn't assume the throne without going through some kind of ceremony that acknowledges his authority before the people. And here the focus is on David being chosen as king of Judah. Now, later, comes in chapter 5, actually, we will see David finally recognized as the king of a united Israel. But that, Esther, is in our next episode.
Right. Yes, it is. So let's backtrack now as we look through chapter 2, because we see this distinction, right? David is king of Judah, but then there's also the kingdom of Israel. And I don't think that the division between Judah and Israel, the north and the south, was evident until the reign of Solomon, if I'm not mistaken. So was this division evident in the time of David already?
Yeah, it was, Esther, and what you just mentioned there, that's a common perception. But yet most Bible scholars agree that those seeds of division were already being sown before David took the throne of Israel, because there was so much tribal animosity by this stage. In fact, even back during the time of the judges, if we cast our minds back to then, the division was apparent then. David, being from Judah in the south, managed to consolidate his strength and his influence there, but the northern region, the 10 tribes which later became known as Israel, well, they tended to align with the rebellion which was led by Abner, who at the time was still loyal to Saul. Abner eventually defects to David, but the point is that this division existed and later formed the foundation for the eventual split of the kingdom. And that came in the days of Solomon's son Rehoboam. We'll get to that eventually when we get to the book of Kings here on Mission 66.
That's right. Well, you know, in the midst of this civil war, I suppose you could say that we notice King David revealing his more romantic side, right? Now, in chapter 3, verse 13, he actually requests the return of his wife, Michal, who is the daughter of Saul, who he paid a bride price of 400 foreskins. I mean, still quite shocking to think about, but he did. So was he really that passionate about having her back with him?
And when you think as well that David went on to have at least 8 or 9 wives, if you include concubines. But Michal was the first one. But I think this wasn't so much about passion. It was more about strategy. So you have this civil war between David's house and Saul's house. And by reclaiming Michal, who is Saul's daughter, David not only proved Abner's loyalty by his willingness to go and bring her back to David, but David also means to strengthen his claim to the throne. Now, all of Saul's sons were either deceased or out of the picture by now, except for Ish-bosheth, who was not going to remain for long. And then you have Mephibosheth, the grandchild who has this physical disability. Well, David's marriage to Michal then provides both political and military advantage over the house of Saul. And so we discern that David is becoming, if he hasn't already become, a man who knows how to combine personal matters with strategic decisions.
Yeah, that's very impressive to see. You know, that definitely makes sense. Well, I suppose we can go ahead and just wrap up this section of questions now by looking at verse 29 of chapter 3. Here we see that Joab has killed Abner, which was one of his offenses. But why does David curse Joab and his entire family line for this?
Yeah, it's a good question, Esther. And to understand it, we've got to consider the cultural context of the ancient world in which these events were happening. Because in those times, a person in authority, especially someone in a patriarchal position who represented God in a way, had the power to pronounce blessings or curses. Now, unfortunately, some groups took these passages out of context to suggest that anyone could declare blessings or curses over others. But David's words here are tied to Joab's actions, which, whilst understandable from Joab's perspective, was still a crime. And Abner himself, well, he was a complex figure. He was seeking to consolidate power by manipulating Saul's son Ish-bosheth for his own purposes, then later he attempts to negotiate with David for political gain. Now, Abner had even killed Asahel, leaving Joab deeply angered. Now, Joab may have intended to do David a favour by killing Abner, but David didn't want his good name associated with vengeance and bloodshed, and so he pronounces a curse on Joab as a way of distancing himself from Joab's actions, and he condemns what Joab did, and he does it publicly.
All right. Well, thanks so much, John, for clarifying a lot of these points. As we've seen, it's quite a lot of historical facts in these chapters. Perhaps you could try to summarize this whirlwind of events that we see in chapters 2 through 4.
Yeah, you know, today's episode, Esther, lots going on, not the easiest to follow, but every part, you know, of the Bible, it teaches us valuable things. And so I'll try to summarize in a way that makes sense and is straightforward. After we looked at chapters 2, 3, and 4 of 2 Samuel, I think there's one question that lingers, and that's how could the people of God find themselves in such a brutal civil war? Well, I suppose you could ask that question about any war that's ever been fought, I suppose. Why would people line up and butcher other people just because some king or president or dictator, whoever it is, tells them to? Well, we have to realize that we do live in a fallen world which is controlled by dark powers. And the truth is that the powers of darkness are always trying to ruin the good plans of God. And they do this by trying to influence the thinking of people involved, to alter thought processes, to lead people astray, and with those misled thoughts, make those people think that those misled thoughts are gospel, are truth. And people entrench around mistruth so often in this situation when God is distant. And the devil loves that. He manipulates those feelings and brings bitterness and strife and envy out of those feelings. And the devil here always trying to keep God's selected person from taking the throne. Saul, well, he devoted his life to trying to kill David in the end and keep the kingdom. He paid for that with his life. His family then try to put up Saul's son Ish-bosheth. Well, that doesn't work either. Saul's house is diminishing while David's is increasing. And this section of three chapters that we've covered in the episode today, it describes the conflict between God's choice for King David, whose team now includes Joab, Abner, and Asahel, and on the other side's Saul's men, like Ish-bosheth and other Saul loyalists who try to keep God's man from succeeding to the throne. Well, what happens, Esther? The fight fizzles out and God's man is ultimately placed on the throne in power. And that's encouraging, isn't it? Because God always, always has a way of bringing about his purposes in spite of all the plots and schemes of man or the devil.
Well, that was a good word indeed, John. Thank you so much for that. And that's where we're going to leave today's episode of Mission 66. But hey, friend, perhaps as you've listened to this episode, you have a comment or a question. Well, I invite you to leave those on our Facebook page at Mission 66. You can be a part of the Mission 66 conversation. You can learn about upcoming topics in the episodes. And of course, you can give us your thoughts on this episode. Just go to Facebook or, of course, to Instagram and type in Mission 66 in the search line. We really look forward to connecting with you on our social media platforms. So until next time, where we'll continue our journey through 2 Samuel, from me, Esther, and for John and the team, goodbye and God bless you.
That wraps up today's episode of Mission 66 with John Matthews and Esther Sisulu. Follow their daily teaching by downloading your free study guide at mission66.org. Go deeper into God's Word and discover how each day's teaching can apply to your life. Download your free study guide at mission66.org and have it for our next program. That's also where you can leave a comment or make a donation to continue Mission 66 here and around the world. That's mission66.org. Mission 66 is a ministry of Transworld Radio in partnership with Dr. Luis Seau.